Call the Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 3:30 on March 27th, or February 27th. We're not that far ahead yet. Be nice if it was March 27th, but it's not. It's February 27th.
We're late.
'06. And for the record, would the committee secretary please call the roll?
Representative Lynn?
Here.
Representative Ledoux?
Here.
Representative Potts?
Here.
Representative Gettler?
Here.
Representative Crawford? Not here. Representative Roper?
Here.
Representative Anderson?
We do have a quorum, and for the record, Representative Anderson, the chair, is on personal business, and I wish him and his
lovely bride.
Lovely bride, the very best in their upcoming birth of their baby boy, I guess. And today we're going to take up three measures, first of which will be House Bill 409, and then followed by House Bill 416, and finally House Bill 389. So with that, we do have the sponsor of House Bill 409 here on the committee, Representative Lynn. I think you'll probably yield to your staff, or maybe not. But in any event, tell us why we should exempt real estate agents, brokers from the workers' comp.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Bob Lynn, District 31 South, Anchorage. And before I go on, I must disclose that I am a licensed real estate broker acting in the capacity of an associate broker for the state of Alaska. I'm currently in referral status, so I need to make that clear. This is a bill, the title says it all, this is a bill that exempts the real estate licensees from workers' compensation. Every state in the union and the federal government have laws that require companies to purchase workers' comp insurance for their employees. And that's good, and I support that. However, real estate agents in Alaska and most other jurisdictions work as and are considered totally independent contractors. They're, by any definition, not employees. And so the question is, what, in fact, is a real estate licensee and insofar as it comes to being an independent contractor versus an employer? First of all, get a job someplace as a realtor, you have to sign an independent contractor agreement with a broker, and you pay for your own services. You don't get a wage, salary, or benefits. Many of us wish we did, but we don't. They receive payment for services that are directly related to the sales or other output related, or other output rather than hours they work. It has no relationship to how long you work. When you do receive payment for your services in the form of a commission, you're required to pay your estimated quarterly income tax. You pay your own Social Security taxes, and that portion of the tax an employer would normally pay for the employee. Real estate licensees pay for all their business expenses. That would include licensing fees, continuing education classes, advertising, mailings, office equipment and supplies, long-distance telephone calls, design and implementation of a personal website, in short, everything. It sounds like a political candidate, actually, doesn't it? They are a business within a business. The broker has no control over the hours spent on how the licensee conducts his or her business so long as it is within the boundaries of the law. And probably most importantly, the Internal Revenue Service considers real estate licensees as independent contractors. This bill, HB 409, is in fact supported by Commissioner O'Clery, representing the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And with that, maybe we could hear from some people online before we take any questions.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Are there any questions initially for the prime sponsor of the bill? Seeing none, then we will go to the teleconference and hear from Mr. Perry Underwood from Anchorage. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
This is Perry Underwood. I am representing the Alaska Association of Realtors. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 409, but I believe also online is Dave Feakin from the Alaska Association of Realtors as well, and I would defer to him if he is online to answer any questions that may come up.
Thank you, Perry. Dave is online, so without further ado, then we will go to Mr. Dave Feakin in the Kenai.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Dave Feakin. I'm in Kenai. I'm representing the Alaska Association of Realtors also as the legislative chair. As Representative Lynn pretty much laid out the whole scenario as to the relationship between a broker and a licensee, and we've been working, the Alaska Association of Realtors has been working for a number of years, probably the last 4 years, trying to resolve this very unclear issue between with the Department of Labor and Workman's Comp. And as you can see in the letter of support from Paul Lestranke, that he basically says the same thing. This clarifies a very unclear area. And as Representative Lynn referred to, the IRS ruled over 30 years ago that the relationship between a broker and a licensee is an independent relationship. The one question I have within the language of the bill on the second page, line 15, it says a person employed, and I'm wondering if the word employed wouldn't be more correct if it said contracted, because that better describes the relationship between licensees and brokers. As would be obvious, the Alaska Association of Realtors supports this piece of legislation, and that pretty much concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Dave. Other questions? Representative Ledoux.
I've got a question, although I'm not sure you're the one to ask it to, but I'll start out with you. I assume that one of the reasons for this bill is that it's to lower the premiums you pay for workers' compensation insurance. But what's it going to do to your liability insurance? Because if these folks aren't under workers' compensation, and then if there is an on-the-job injury in which somebody is negligent, not, you know, one of these things which is just something where there's no negligence involved, but an on-the-job injury in which, let's say, an actual employee of the real estate company is negligent. What's that going to do to your liability insurance rates?
Well, I'm not an attorney or an insurance expert, but I do know that independent contractor agreements require the licensee to also have general liability insurance. At most of them are at a $500 or $1 million limit. It's part of the requirement of that independent agreement. And they're pretty lengthy agreements that we're talking about.
That's what I mean. There will be general liability insurance, so will it jack up the rates of the general liability insurance at the same time it's reducing the rates of the workers' compensation insurance? That's just a question.
But it's not preventing the licensee from going out and buying workman's compensation. And in a lot of cases, they can buy it cheaper than the broker can. The independent person is going to get a better rate than a larger company does. I mean, we're hearing that feedback in Anchorage right now, where the licensees can go out and buy it cheaper than the larger brokers do.
That may very well be the case, and I don't have any objection to this bill. I'm just wondering whether it's going to end up resulting in higher rates of insurance for the liability insurance, and maybe there's somebody who can answer that question.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. I agree with the response that Representative Roper will provide you to that question. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, there would be no impact on the liability property casualty insurance because of the nature of workers' comp, which is to insure the worker in a case of injury to the worker. The liability would only be in account of an individual who had a policy damaged somebody else's property. No?
No. If the worker is not an employee, then, and the worker is an independent contractor, then that independent contractor has the right to sue the entity which is contracting with him, not employing him, but contracting with him in tort.
Right, but that's the case now. So that
no, that's
no.
No, that's not the case now.
Well, they're independent contractors now. That's true.
If you have workers' compensation insurance, then I don't think you can sue in...
Well, that's the issue here. For all purposes and all tests, they are independent contractors, except with one exception, workers' compensation. We're trying to conform that here. That's why. So in all other instances, they wouldn't be independent contractors. So I guess you could make your argument in both ways, but I don't think that's the case.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just make a,
make up a scenario here. I don't see anywhere in this bill where you require the licensee to have workers' comp insurance. But if you're hurt on the job, you're not able to access your health insurance from an on-the-job injury. Say you walked into your real estate broker's office and were poisoned by a faulty heater there, and you got carbon monoxide poisoning, and you found out that actually the brokership there didn't do their proper inspections and allowed that to put out carbon monoxide poisoning, then you would be able to sue the broker for in tort for their liability because they were negligent in your workplace. Wouldn't it be better if you're going to take away the liability under workers' comp, but you know, add the liability under negligence to require the licensees to now have workers' comp insurance on themselves as independent contractors?
Mr. Chairman, I think I answered the question by saying you can sue.
You can't sue under, when there's workers' comp insurance.
That's why we're getting rid of it.
But then you can sue.
Right. You can sue today, though.
But you can't sue when there's workers' comp insurance there. You're exempt.
That's the problem here. We shouldn't have workers' comp. That's why the bill's before us.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, health insurance, I've held a real estate license for many, many years. Never had company-provided health insurance.
If we can have the department come up.
We do have Paul here from the department. I'm not sure that's his area of expertise, but if you want to pose the question to Mr. Lysenki, please do so, whomever. Paul, you hear the dialogue that's taking place. Can you shed any light on what's being discussed, or is it out of your parameter here?
For the record, my name is Paul F. Lysenki. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation within the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I can shed a little bit of light on it. I would defer to insurance as far as a question of Representative Ledoux's question of what would the impact be on someone's rate for insuring liability. The light I would try and shed is this. The confusion right now that the commissioner was talking about in his letter is that there are realtors and their associates who believe firmly that they have an independent contractor relationship. And then they find out later that there is someone else who believes that, contrary to their understanding, that they actually have an employer-employee relationship. So this bill was aimed at least separating that confusion and doing away with it. The statement by Representative Ledoux about if someone is not your employee and they are hurt due to your negligence, can they sue you? I believe the answer that she's proposed is correct. Indeed, like any other independent person, if you hurt them and you are sufficiently negligent and they sue you, they may be able to recover. And I think that was Representative Roekberg's point, is that they believe right now, many realtors believe right now, that they're in that posture because they believe that the people who are also working along with them are independent contractors. So I am presuming that those realtors that have a business have liability insurance. And then the question becomes what Representative Ledoux, her specific question is that going to incrementally increase how much they pay for it? And my answer to that, Mr. Chairman, is I don't know.
Well, you're correct, Paul. You could shed a little bit of light on that. You have. Are there any further questions for Paul? Paul, there was a comment brought up about making an amendment on page 2, line 15, to a person striking employed and inserting contracted. that problematic?
Mr. Where? Chairman, I don't personally see it as that problematic because of the specifics of that whole provision make it fairly clear that if this was passed, the intention is that these qualified real estate professionals would not be receiving workers' compensation, whether you use the term employed or not. I guess you could do it either way, but the reason that I wouldn't necessarily suggest that it's problematic is there are a number of the law, places in the law that refer to real estate, licensed real estate folks, and they talk about being employed. And I'm not sure that using that word is a bad thing, even if they're not going to get workers' compensation. I mean, the law oftentimes in different areas says you're employed, meaning generically you're doing work, as opposed to you are an employee under the Workers' Compensation Act. If it said employee, I might be more concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the broker carries workers' comp insurance right now on the licensees, and there was an accident on the job, like I described, or something similar, would the licensee be able to sue the broker for negligence if there's a workers' comp insurance in place now?
Through the chair, Representative Crawford. The simple answer is no, they wouldn't.
Okay.
Because the employer broker would be asserting the exclusive liability provision of the Workers' Compensation Act. The less simple answer is a creative attorney might turn it around and say, well, you thought that my client was your employee, but they were really an independent contractor. And you'd have the same kind of argument on that side of the law as you might in workers' comp. Mm-hmm. But you are correct that if someone is found to be an employee subject to the workers' compensation benefit, then they cannot sue their employer for that injury.
So conversely, if we pass this bill so that the licensee uncertainty is removed and they are no longer an employee, and then there is an accident on the job, and obviously the licensee can't go to his health insurance, could he in fact sue the broker or whoever caused the accident under tort?
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, my understanding would be that they could attempt a lawsuit if they felt that there was negligence or some basis for recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they would be successful or not would be ultimately up to a judge and a jury.
Right.
The one question I would perhaps defer to the Division of Insurance, because I am reluctant to make a presumption, is if you were to look at the bill, for example, and look at subsection 9, which is currently a matter of statute, and it talks about professional hockey players and coaches do not get workers' compensation provided certain things occur. And you'll notice that one of them says that they have to have health care insurance from the team that covers both work-related and non-work-related injuries. That suggests to me that there is insurance available that could be purchased that would not make the distinction between a work-related injury and a non-work-related injury. But I'm not an expert in workers' compensation insurance policies.
Mr. Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the history of workers' comp claims that we're dealing with here? Have there been a lot? Have there been a few? Have they been resolved?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I do not have reliable information about exactly how many injuries have been sustained by people that are real estate licensees. We don't capture that information. I know on a couple of occasions, just from cases that I've read, that that sometimes people end up before the Workers' Compensation Board arguing about whether they're an independent contractor or an employee. I'm also aware that that there was a case maybe about 8 years ago that sticks in my mind just because it was such a large case, and it was a case where it was accepted that the licensee was an employee and had gotten workers' compensation for 20 years, and then there was at that point an argument about whether they were going to be entitled to more than $1 million of additional medical care. It was, as you might imagine, a severe injury. It was a brain injury incurred in a car wreck. So I know that people who are in the real estate business sometimes get hurt. I mean, I'm sure of that. But I cannot tell you how many potential injuries there are per year, for example. Perhaps people in the industry might be able to address it just from, you know, if they have a big enough brokerage or something, they might be able to tell you whether they've had any reported injuries in the last couple of years.
Similar to
going to Representative Crawford's question before, and I know this goes exactly against what I just wrote you in the note, Representative Roper, but in the field of maritime law, at least, there's a long line of cases in which people were getting workers' compensation insurance, and then somebody figured out that they were actually seamen and entitled to maritime compensation, so that they were actually able to, they could elect, they could decide. And the fact that they had taken workers' compensation initially, once they got a lawyer who got the maritime benefits, that didn't count against them. So in other words, they kind of did both.
Any further questions for Paul, Representative Roper?
Oh, I just have a comment. No, not for Mr. Lusnik.
Okay. Seeing no more questions, thank you, Paul, for shedding a little bit of light on the topic.
Anybody from the Division of Insurance?
I don't show anyone else here signed up to testify. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify on House Bill 409? Is there anyone else in the audience here in Juneau other than Charlie Miller that would like to testify in House Bill 409? Charlie, can you step up? You're up. Actually, Charlie did not sign up, but there was a question, I think, that maybe you'll be able to shed a little bit of light.
That's possible, Mr. Chairman, but I'm not here representing any of my clients and authorized to speak on their behalf, so... within those boundaries, if I can help.
Just state your name.
Okay, my name's Charlie Miller.
The Juneau expert.
Juneau expert. Juneau expert. Multitude of things of which
this is getting pathetic here, isn't it?
Thank you, Charlie. Representative Ledoux, I think you had a question that you
would their liability insurance go up?
My understanding is that the liability works along the same lines as comp, which I'm familiar with, which is the rates are not prospective. You have to show loss before it's rolled into the loss costs, which then go into the rate. So I think by potentially adding the liability that you're referring to, I think it would have to be reflected in loss costs retrospectively for rates to then increase. I don't think they could, and I'm not an expert here, but I don't think they could say, well, we may have more accidents and raise the GL rates. But I would caution you to check with the actuarial people at the Division of Insurance to be certain of that. But in my experience, rates are done not prospectively like that, but retrospectively, the loss cost component anyway.
Thank you.
Representative Roper, did you have a question?
No.
Thank you, Charlie, for turning on another light bulb. If there's no one else here in Juneau that wishes to testify in House Bill 409, we'll close public testimony. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I just would say that Mike's 30 years of some experience in the real estate industry, which I want to put on the record, I may have a conflict of interest because I'm a broker, licensed broker in the state of Alaska, but I don't have any real employees. So, but I would think right now that if there were a negative impact on the cost of the liability insurance, that the brokerage community would readily accept that compared to what their rates for workers' comp are. So I'm not concerned about that. I did want to put one thing on the record, Mr. Chairman, is that the way the business is organized now, the employers employ a number of people, and particularly there's a tendency or trend towards the demise of small brokerage houses into larger brokerage houses in large in the more metropolitan areas of the state, kind of a consolidation of business. And what's happening is the brokers are employing more people and therefore would have to have workers' compensation insurance for their employees. There's no question about that. I just want to put that on the record. Also, there are associate brokers that work within the same brokerage house who are independent contractors, but they too in turn will hire associates and assistants to assist them in their business. And those people would have to have workers' compensation insurance. There's no question about that. So it's the question of where the incidence of the insurance lies here. And I think that people are truly employed are not going to be without benefit. And I think that's the point I wanted to put on the record.
Thank you, Representative Roberg. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the intent of this bill is to shift the cost of workers' comp away from the brokers and to the licensees or independent contractors. I don't believe that the majority of the brokerships in Alaska understand that they are opening this liability opening themselves up to this liability if they realized that they could possibly lose their business because they could now be sued for negligence where other businesses can't when their employees get hurt. I don't think that they would be so much in favor of this bill. I think that if this bill goes through, that it needs an amendment that requires the licensees to carry workers' comp insurance on themselves so that it doesn't open up this area of liability or tort. And I would like to make an amendment that would state that. We would require the licensees to carry their own workers' comp insurance.
Okay.
That's a conceptual amendment. That
would be a conceptual amendment.
Object.
Representative Lynn has objected. Is there a discussion on the amendment?
Well, part of being an independent contractor is that you are, in fact, independent. In my own case, for example, I have other sources of insurance, you know, my military, health insurance, Medicare, and so on. I certainly wouldn't need it. Just to mandate that would be a disservice to me. I don't think it's required.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. I'm just trying to thinking about this. If you're the licensee, and you've got a business license, and you're carrying what kind of insurance and what kind of liability does that have for you? And did you have, what's rolled into that? Do you have a liability?
Mr. Chair, in response to that, in many cases, larger brokerage houses will have E&O insurance, but not all. It's an elective, and also liability insurance. But the individuals, I believe, if they're active, should have a business liability and umbrella policy that covers them in the case that there's any cause of action for that they'd be liable for. But to mandate the workers' comp, I think, defeats the purpose of the bill here. Is to indicate that these people are independent contractors and not employed by someone that supervises them. But this does not state that they would not have the liability to buy workers' comp if they had employees. They clearly have to have workers' comp if they have any employees. This is only if they're not employed. So I'd be very strongly against this amendment.
Representative Ledoux.
And then this is just a cost-shifting measure. I mean, if you mandate that the independent contractor has to carry the workers' compensation insurance, all that manages to do is shift the cost of the workers' compensation insurance from that person to the broker. And I mean, if there's a problem with the premiums in workers' compensation insurance, why should we be doing that?
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The simple reason is that when you get injured on the job, you go to the hospital or emergency room or to the doctor, first question they ask you is, was this an on-the-job injury? If it was an on-the-job injury, you can't charge that to your health insurance. You can't charge that to your Medicare. You're just out of luck. So then you have to look to somebody to sue, because you can't do it on your state insurance if you get hurt in that manner.
Representative Roper, Guttenberg, and Ledoux.
Mr. Chairman, I would disagree with the Representative Crawford's assertion that you would be prohibited from accessing any health insurance coverage you'd have because you're an independent contractor. And if you're working your own profession, you have the rights to do that. A statement you make in the emergency room is not determinative of the facts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're a licensee and you don't have any employees, are you required now to get workers' comp? I don't
No.
think so.
Yeah.
Can you buy workers' comp in that situation currently?
You can buy it, by our standing.
If you will.
He's already shaking his head. Yes, I think he has workers' comp on himself. As a policy.
He got a deal, though.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, I was just going to say, I have a law firm, and I don't carry workers' compensation insurance on myself. I can't believe that if I got injured, you know, while I was working, like in an automobile accident or something like that, then my health insurance wouldn't pay for it. As a matter of fact, I mean, I think that the question is there any other source that's going to pay for it, not whether it's an on-the-job injury.
Further discussion on conceptual amendment number one.
I just make the point that there are other groups out there who are not mandated to have, I'm told, to have workers' comp, and sole proprietorships are required to have workers' comp. Yes, she was saying.
Or commercial fishermen, for that matter.
Okay, so seeing no further debate, please call the roll.
No.
Representative Lynn?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Pott?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
Yes.
And my friend Harry.
Okay, conceptual amendment number one, which the drafters will appreciate since we don't have to write it up for them, has been defeated. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I would move conceptual amendment number 2, page 2, line 15, and delete the word employed and add the word working.
So read a person working as a qualified real estate licensee.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Is there objection to conceptual amendment number 2? Hearing none, the amendment carries. Are there further amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roberg.
I move House Bill 409 with individual recommendations, as amended with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
The motion is to move House Bill 409 out of committee. Is there objection?
There is an objection.
There is an objection to moving the bill forward. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll? Unless you would like to speak to your objection first.
I would.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I for the reasons already stated, I don't believe that the majority of the brokers out there realize that that what they're doing by doing away with workers' comp insurance, they're setting themselves up to be liable so that they could be sued by people that work not for them. I mean, because we're clearing it up, they will then be an independent contractor, but they will no longer have that protection of the employer-employee relationship with the workers' comp. Then they will be able to be sued for any sort of negligent behavior, and they're protected today, but they won't be protected after this bill passes. So that's my objection there.
Sticking up for the realtors.
Well, I would just say, Mr.
Representative
Chairman, I'd say, Mr. Chairman, that the majority of brokers I find to be pretty smart individuals, and they understand the difference between independent contractors and employees, and I think they have an understanding of this issue as well as anybody else on this committee.
I think what Representative Crawford was suggesting is don't ask for it, you might get it. Representative Guttmer.
Thank you. I'll be voting yes to move it, simply because it goes to finance, and I hope the sponsor brings asks the division to come in with Vision Insurance to come and answer some of these questions.
Will do.
Okay, seeing
no, remove my objection.
Seeing no objection, House Bill 409 is moved on to the House Finance Committee for their analysis. Thank you for those who have attended online and here in person. And a special thanks to Mr. Charlie Miller for being
brilliant,
so
brilliant, Charlie.
Prepared.
I hope you guys don't get me fired.
Don't bill us.
You're not leaving. We have another bill we might have.
Where's the rest of the packet? I just got this one bill only.
Okay.
Yeah.
As members are signing the...
Take that, I don't have the other bills.
Sheet here. We'll bring up House Bill 416. And we do have the prime sponsor of this bill, which I think a couple of us are very familiar with the issue at hand, since some of us bled over this a couple of years ago, right, Representative Roekberg? So without further ado, I didn't say without further ado, I said ado. Representative Rambis, you got the floor.
You use a pun, go to jail.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Labor Committee. It's a pleasure to be here in front of you, and although I'm new to this body, I'm not at all new to paying business license fees, as I have maintained a business license in the state of Alaska for 20 or 21 years. Like many Alaskans, I was sad to see the increase in license fees several years ago when the state faced a large deficit, and we just spent the last 2 hours upstairs with ConocoPhillips addressing we think the next couple of decades in fiscal certainty on oil and a new taxation methodology for oil and gas in this state. And it seems to me that the business license fee at $100 is remarkably high. There is a reason that we have not seen a sales tax introduced on sales on the internet, and that is because the federal government believes that it's still important to foster commerce through the internet, and I share the same point of view when it comes to fostering small businesses that are not oil and gas related. And we believe that rolling the business license fee back to $25 or to accepting an amendment to change the business license fee to $50 sends a strong signal to Alaskans that we are open for business when it comes to small business, and that we ought to be encouraging small businesses and not providing them with impediments or with nuisance taxes, as the case may be. And so I come before the committee humbly today and ask you to consider, after leaving much blood on the floor a couple of years ago, Mr. Chairman, to reconsider reducing the business license fee.
Does that conclude your comments?
I'm happy to answer questions, but I'm intimidated by the rules, Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, hold them back.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm surprised.
Representative Roberg.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Representative Ramis should not be feel intimidated by me at all. Not yet. Well, Mr. Chairman, it's rather strange. Just for the record here, this is an interesting bill that the Representative Cott's chairman and myself have worked very hard when this bill was increased by the governor to keep it lower. We did bleed pretty profusely. And so you've trapped us in this very uncomfortable position here.
You can't bind yourself from one legislator to the next.
Right. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that this is called a fee. And I think the definition of fees is that they charge the business license holders the amount of money that it costs to administer the program. This is actually a revenue measure, a taxing measure, because they get much more than what it costs to actually administer the license. I am much in favor of this bill and support Representative Brammers' efforts here.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And we did bleed this a few years ago in this committee. A question I have for you, Representative Brammers. Did you think about putting a maximum that a person would pay for the number of license fees? You know, they got a snow plowing fee, they're a business, they're a taxidermist, they, you know, do three or four things, and all of a sudden it's adding up, instead of just a general broad, you know, maximum on, you know, putting a number of categories on there.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we did. Representative Stoltz, who testified in the committee first referral, suggested exactly such a thing. And if I may, I saw the member next to you, Representative Guttenberg, grimace a little bit at the fiscal note. But I'll remind you that it was a new source of revenue only 2 years ago. So we're one to look at the revenue that a business license generated 2 years or 3 years ago. There wouldn't be any change at all. And also, when I write a check for a business license, I grimace also, and I think that most small business owners do, and I think that it inhibits a lot of the entrepreneurship that we would otherwise see, and that's how we create commerce in this state, is by creating businesses, not by creating the fees that are associated with them.
Jay, do you think that a fine up to $50 is sufficient deterrent to ensure those that are not operating within the intent of the law do so?
Mr. Chairman, we were told that they've never levied in the history of Alaska as they know it. They've never levied a charge or a fine against somebody for not having a business license yet. When we had testimony from I'm trying to remember, Representative Lynn, who testified, which department that was, Commerce and Economic Development?
I think so, yes. Yes.
Yeah, it was Mr. Urien, Director Urien, said that they had never fined anybody nor charged anybody with a misdemeanor for not having a business license.
Is there currently a provision in law that allows them to do so? And to what extent, do you know?
I don't believe so.
There is a misdemeanor. For the record, Jim Pound, staff representative, it's a misdemeanor right now. That's why it's never been pursued, because it's more trouble than it's worth to go through the court process. This would drop it down to an infraction, which is basically a traffic violation type.
It would.
Where? Are we in statute deleting that provision then?
Yeah, where?
Or am I missing it?
The F version here? Oh, yeah. Section 1, Mr. Chairman.
We're adding a new section that allows the division to fine up to $50, but if there's something in statute that says it's a misdemeanor right now, are we leaving both in place?
Mr. Chair, I'm only going by what I was told by the department, that it's a misdemeanor, and that I'm sorry, I have not reviewed the current statute, so.
Josh,
43.
Does this get a further referral?
This.
Probably to finance. I would ask that that question as we move this thing through the process. If you could ask that question, Mr. Urien, on whether or not, and I would assume that if it were in statute, that the drafters would have picked up on that and would have removed that section and replaced it with your language here. But we're adding a new section, so it leads me to believe that it's either been overlooked or there's been some misleading information provided. As we're talking, Representative Roper, he's busy over there looking up the citation and statute books.
Why
don't we take the brief at ease in the event that he can locate that? Yeah, brief at ease. $25 is excessive.
Mr. Chairman, is this
agreeable? Reasonable, okay.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, is this $4.275 million come out of the Fairbanks capital budget? Is that where the fiscal note is?
If it comes out of your district, it won't matter.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, one of the rules we have is the Graham Rudman, the PAYGO rule. If you're going to reduce something, you got to cover it somewhere. That's the old philosophy.
Well, I think that's probably a good philosophy. I think the sponsor also recognizes that there are a number of businesses operating without a license out there, and under the current guise of the scheme that's in the statutes, they're not prosecuted under a misdemeanor. It'd be more appropriate to fine them $50, and that revenue would overtake the amount of loss by reducing the license fee. So.
I would agree with the previous comment. I was just amazed when we learned that you know, hundreds of people out there buying business licenses for $100 or whatever it was, and they were, I guess, quote, the dumb ones, unquote. Those who didn't get a license for any amount of money just skated. I thought it was kind of outrageous that they were left alone. I strongly support this bill. I think it's a wonderful thing, if not maybe a little radical and unprecedented, to actually roll back a tax. I know when we passed the thing a couple years ago, one of my first bills, I had some trepidation at the time, but our budget then was not what it is now. And I think we should roll back this tax and other taxes whenever possible, whenever practical. And so I strongly support this bill.
President Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if this means the Resource Committee has to raise the PPD to make up for the difference.
No,
it
doesn't.
26%.
That's why I said practical.
We're working on it, Representative Rokenberg.
I can tell. I can hear the old crap meter working.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez, for your testimony. I don't have anybody signed up representing the thousands of small businessmen around the state. But I would
who was screaming when I heard it the first time.
Put on the record that I have a small business license, and I would subsequently have a conflict, although I have no problem in supporting a reduction in my rates.
No objection. Mr. Chairman, I also want to indicate that I'm a biennial applicant for a Alaska State business license, so therefore I have a conflict of interest.
No objection.
I've got a question here. What about the people who just paid, like I did, $200 for their 2-year business license? How would this impact those people? Is there any thought of a provision or anything to refund it back?
Through the chair, no, ma'am.
Well, we need a transitional period then.
I guess just the luck of the draw. I'm in the same predicament.
That's an excellent question.
I'm in the same predicament as well.
I think to provide some kind of transitional period or reflect backwards would be awful difficult for the division to even manage.
Just give them for $73 million free.
I think this, actually the business license works on a calendar year basis rather than a fiscal year basis, which even complicates matters worse. Whatever we did would even cross over from one fiscal year to the next. I mean, if we say ideally put an effective date of July 1 on the thing and then gave refunds for people that were had paid in advance. I guess the only other way to do it would be to make an effective date of December 31, 2006 and say anybody that paid for 2007 or that portion would be prorated refund or something like that to minimize the impact. So I don't know.
Representative will do.
You could do a credit, assuming they're still in business.
Credit against what?
Well, in other words, when it comes time for them to renew their license again, then they have credit for the...
True.
Assuming that the $200 hasn't put them out of business.
No, they're still in business here. Right. So it's like prepaying their business license fee for 4 years, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that'd be one way to do it.
Representative Rambis, was there any consideration given to allowing those in business an opportunity to purchase a lifetime membership
in a gym for health insurance purposes?
The Friday attitude here.
Or to buy a recorker.
All right. Is there any further discussion on House Bill 416? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. And Representative Roberg, did you have a comment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really do think we got to address this issue of transition here. It would be remiss if not. And I'd like to hear any input from the sponsor and also, you know, if somebody else wants to make an amendment to, say, 50 or something. You know. I'm not making it.
Representative Rambis, was there any consideration for some transitional language?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, we're open to an amendment to take it to 50, but I appreciate the member's reluctance to do so. And secondly, no, I hadn't thought to put an effective date on it, but I would think that January 1 of 07 would be appropriate, and those that lose a year at the higher rate, that was the fee at that time. But I think putting an effective date in that's a cutoff of December 31 is an appropriate approach. But it wasn't interested in an effort to rebate or to cause the government to generate work in generating credits or rebates to people and put an extra burden on government. I was actually trying to ease the situation on small business people going forward. So I'd be delighted to put an effective date of December 31, 2006 on it.
But what about the people that paid beyond that?
Through the chair, Representative Ruckelberg, I believe they just would be paid for those 2 years.
Oh, it's good. Okay. That's a tough luck amendment, right?
Okay. So, through the chair, Representative Ruckelberg, it's the good luck amendment.
Well, you don't have to pay any more, but what you paid, you don't get back.
Yes, sir. Through the chair.
Any further discussion?
Is that move this?
A kiss?
Representative Lynn.
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House.
Oh, object, object.
Object?
Yeah. We have to put...
I haven't done anything to object to yet.
Well, you're moving the bill.
Okay.
We've got to have a motion to object.
Well, no.
You have an amendment prior to...
Yeah, let's do an amendment here.
Oh, we argued an amendment. I didn't know you were doing an amendment.
Effective date, Mr. Chairman, I move that we add an effective date of December 31, 2006. No, that's not right. Mr. Chairman, I move an immediate effective date on the bill and with... We have a brief at ease.
We'll take a brief at ease.
Yeah, the trouble here, Jay, I would ask that we hold the bill over to the next meeting and with the request of sponsors to look into the transitional matters, the need for regulation and or time for the Division of Occupational Licensing to prepare for and make recommendations as to what dates they want to make the transition to a different rate.
Okay. With that, then Representative Rambis will hold the bill over until Wednesday, at which point we'll move it forward. And between now and Wednesday, you can get with
Mr.
Urien or someone over in the division to come up with maybe an effective date or maybe some transitional language, whatever is appropriate.
If you do the seat. Oh, sorry.
then we can go forward. Representative Roper.
No, I'm going to talk to him off the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
Okay, that brings us next to House Bill 389. And I see we do have a member of the staff of Representative Coghill, who is the prime sponsor. Ma'am, if you'd state your name. And
for the record, my name is Karen Lidster, and I am staff to Representative John Coghill. And the bill before you is taking care of just a little bit of housekeeping work. The jurisdiction for trailer camps and public facilities, those health and safety issues, is under the jurisdiction of Department of Environmental Conservation. And in Alaska Statute 1835, that is where the it is set out how they actually go about handling and maintaining the public health over these motels, tourist accommodations, parks, camps, RV parks, that type of thing. And over the over a period of time, a portion of the section in 1835 is actually no longer used, and this bill will go ahead and repeal those sections and get them off the books since they're not used, the permitting, and then a penalty for noncompliance with the permit requirement. And in 070, it also speaks to the posting of the regulations, which no longer will be necessary. So, before you is a bill that just cleans up a little bit of the statute.
Thank you. And this is the result of a memo sent to the departments asking them what statutes could be repealed.
They could be repealed, yes, sir.
Could be repealed. We only had one response.
This is the only response that I have right here before me that I'm carrying at this point. Sir. The rest of the regulations that are in 1835 give the department all the oversight and authority that they need to continue to maintain public health and safety.
There are questions for the sponsor staff. Does anybody care down the other end of the table? Or?
You'd be surprised, Mr. Chairman.
You want to read it too?
Yeah.
Okay, while you're reading it, if there's no questions for the sponsor staff, then thank you very much for your testimony. I'll let Representative Coghill know that you did a fine job representing him.
Thank you.
And next, we'll hear from Kristen Ryan, the director of DEC.
We have your book.
No, I had yours.
Okay.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health in the Department of Environmental Conservation and have the responsibility of regulating public accommodations. The statutory authority that's being repealed by this legislation has not been enacted, as far as I have been able to tell, since the 60s. We've gone that far back and seen no permit records. We don't permit public accommodations, so we don't need the statutory authority to require us to do so. We do complaint investigations. We do have sanitation regulations on the books that were published actually in 1982 and are in need of a major revision. And so this is actually the first step. If we can get our statutory authority more up to date with what we're doing, then we'll approach setting sanitation standards that are appropriate. The bill does not eliminate our authority to set sanitation standards, and we would continue to support us doing that and investigating complaints, which we receive about 30 a year. It's not very frequent, but it's occasional. And they range from everything from mice in the rooms to the rooms not being clean to the water not being hot. It's a variety, and usually it's a simple complaint follow-up. But there's no need. The risks are low. The public health risks are low. and our staffing isn't, you know, able to do a more thorough investigation, and there really isn't a need to for public health reasons. So we don't need a permit structure in place to regulate these facilities adequately.
Thank you, Kristen. Are the questions for the director? Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ryan. This bill is not to be confused with another bill that speaks to public accommodations also, or am I mistaking? There's Mrs. Representative Meyer has another piece of legislation. Does that cover anything that relates to public accommodations?
Yes, Representative Rookwork, through the chair. The bill you're referring to is House Bill 360. It requires the department to regulate small public water systems. Isn't it? And the definition of small public water systems at any public accommodation. And if you look at the definition of public accommodation, it's extremely broad. It includes basically any business that provides services to the public. So a bed and breakfast, a daycare, a gas station, a preschool. There's quite a large, actually there's about 3,000 facilities, we think, that are small facilities that aren't regulated. Their drinking water isn't regulated right now, yet they provide a service to the public. That's that legislation. So it would, a public accommodation under this bill, say a bed and breakfast that's small, we don't permit them now. This bill wouldn't change that fact. But Representative Meyer's bill would require us to regulate their drinking water if it passed.
This is merely, through the chair, Mr. Ryan, this is merely deleting the permitting provision. Is that correct?
Representative Roper, through the chair, it deletes our requirement to require a sanitation permit. We still regulate the facilities if they're larger for their water, their wastewater, their food inspections. That's all still occurring. But the small ones that serve 25 or less people, we are not regulating their water currently.
Right, but then how do you know if they were less than 25? If this bill were to pass, how do you know they're there?
Well,
you're not issuing permits now. Is that what the testimony is?
Correct.
So that's another issue. So if you have a responsibility to regulate the water quality of those public accommodations, otherwise, how are you going to be aware that they're there or exist?
Well, Representative Roper, through the chair, it's common. I mean, we frequently find facilities that fall under our regulatory requirements and aren't, and at that point we notify them of the requirements that they're supposed to comply with, and we inform them how to do that.
Wasn't that part of the need for a permitting process in the first place when you were regulating all such public accommodation? My mistake.
Representative Roper, through the chair, I really don't know why they initially. Usually a permit is used when you want to have greater oversight over a particular industry. You want to have yearly contact with them at a minimum, if not more frequently, doing inspections. And so that, I assume, is why they wanted the permit structure in place, is there was a need at one point back in 1959, I think, is where they initially proposed the statute before we were in a state, that there be a sanitation standard and a permit in place for public accommodations.
Representative Dunbar.
Thank you. I think you addressed one of my concerns. You're not permitting them. So it's under 25, like a bed and breakfast. So there's no kitchen permits. There's no sanitary. There is one proposed for drinking water, but there's nothing right now. So was that what I'm reading? I'm trying to figure out who we're not touching now and how far up it rises before we reach that threshold.
Well, Representative Guttenberg, that's a very difficult question, and one talking about House Bill 360, I know, is confusing things a little bit. Depending on what we're regulating, we have different cutoffs for how low we go. For drinking water, it's 25 people. If it's 25 people or less, we do not regulate them, even if they're a public facility providing water to the public. 25 people or less, we have no funding associated with that work, and therefore don't do it. Food establishments, we regulate. Right now, our current regulations say 10 or lower, we don't regulate you. But if you serve 10 or more people, we do. We have regulations we recently proposed that up that to 12, that the cutoff would be at 12. Wastewater, you're required to have a system that's been installed by a certified engineer, no matter if you're a private home.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So so it varies by type. What this bill is dealing with only, though, is our sanitation permit, which would go above and beyond all those other oversights.
So all this bill is really doing is it's cleaning the statutes up, really, in the end.
Representative Guntram, yes. We still will be regulating them in all those other fields, depending on our cutoffs, and investigating complaints. We'll still be setting sanitation standards. We just don't need that deep of control to have a permit structure in place. We don't need that bureaucracy level.
So Mr. Chair, so if somebody is at a bed and breakfast and there's two bedrooms there or two suites, whatever it is, who complains to you about bugs, vermin, brown drinking water,
mm-hmm.
What happens then? You still have that authority to go and look at it. And
that's correct, Representative Gunnemer.
If it's polluted. But not before.
Okay.
That's the ABC board's problem.
Any further questions for the director? As she's indicated, this is a mini revisor's bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't have anyone else that have signed up, testified. Is there anyone else online that I might have missed? Or Mr. Etheridge, did you want to testify in this particular measure?
No, I think we're okay on
this. Okay, we're okay on this one. Doesn't affect the tug or anything. Okay, with that, we'll close public testimony and move it along. Representative Crawford. 389.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill number 389, version G, I believe it is, with no attached fiscal notes. Zero fiscal notes.
The motion is to move House Bill 389 out of committee, individual recommendations, and zero fiscal note. Seeing or hearing no objection, bill is moved, and we're adjourned at 4:40.